WBPV LP 100.1 FM, Bradenton. This is Jamie Kerber with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, October 17th. Residents of Sarasota and Manatee County continue to battle the after effects of Hurricane Milton's direct impact to the area. Anxious to return to a sense of normalcy, patience is running low for residents still without power or safe water. All levels of city, county, state, and federal government agencies are diligently working towards full restoration. Public schools have reopened. Drive with extra caution in school zones, as not all traffic signals are fully functional. Cleanup of construction and vegetative debris has resumed in Sarasota County. As of Tuesday, over 180 tons or 8,200 cubic yards had already been collected. For perspective, that is the weight of over 30 full-grown African bush elephants. Residents may drop off vegetative debris at no cost Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at either Rothenbach Park at 8650 Bee Ridge Road, Sarasota, or Jackson Road Transfer Station at 250 South Jackson Road, Venice. Proof of residency is required, and residents must self-unload all debris. Those waiting for collection, please refrain from piling debris by fire hydrants, sewer drains, lift stations, and county parks. Visit scgov.net or call 311 for more information on debris collection and self-removal, disaster recovery center updates, locations and hours of comfort stations and points of distribution, county parks, information management, water boil notifications, and breeze transit requests. A sincere thank you to the dedicated staff at Sarasota County's 311 Center for handling over 20,000 calls since October 7th. Sarasota County is offering a temporary suspension of the permit application fees submitted between October 14th through the 22nd for repair of documented damage caused by Hurricane Milton. Last night, Wednesday evening, Sarasota County Mosquito Management Services did complete the rescheduled ground treatment of the area east of School Avenue between 12th and Bella Vista. Visit scgov.net for more details, to register for notifications, or to request service. This has been Jamie Kerber with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, October 17th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Ann Tunis, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. If you had any doubts about the importance of local government, these hurricanes certainly may change your mind. Shout out there to all the great people who work for Sarasota County, the City of Sarasota, the City of Longboat Key, the City of Venice, the City of Northport. Where would we be without you all? You're making a tremendous difference. And for everyone listening, I hope you came through the storm okay. If you did lose a lot, I hope you're getting the help you need. I know there's a FEMA center set up at the Municipal Auditorium, which has been very busy. So I think it's appropriate today that we're talking. We have elections upon us. I know with everything, there's a lot of hurricane fatigue. I know I've got it. But we have important decisions to make with local elections on November 5th. So joining me today is Sherry Thornton. She is an independent candidate that is running for District 3, which is in Venice, for the county commission. Sherry has an impressive corporate career. She moved down here and decided to get involved in the community, and now she's running for office. Sherry Thornton, thank you so much for making the drive. You drove up here to our studios from Venice. Thank you.
Well, Kathy, thank you for having me. And yeah, it's interesting. I really want to do a shout out to the people that are working, and thank you for recognizing them. There's also multiple volunteer groups that are supporting people in the community as well. I know the Rotarians have in the Venice area at the Arts Center, they've got a station set up and people can come there and they'll actually help you remove debris and those types of things. So there's a lot of people in government that are helping. There's a lot of people in the private sector that are helping free of charge.
Absolutely. Like all the people who volunteered for the shelters, the hurricane shelters. Mm-hmm. There's so many wonderful neighbors here. We are very grateful. But boy, what a time.
It has been. Yeah. And, you know, I'm actually the president of my HOA. So I rounded through my community after the storm. And we were fortunate. We have, you know, some debris damage, landscaping, cage, those types of things. But, you know, considering what other people went through, I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, and I do want to talk more about that. I mean, certainly our barrier islands have gotten hit really hard. But Sherry Thornton, you worked hard. You had a great corporate career. You moved down here, I assume, to enjoy your retirement. Tell us about that career, number one. I want to hear your story, where you're from, what you did. And then I want to ask you, why the heck are you running for public office? So, but let's start with your story. Where are you from originally, and tell us about your career.
Well, I have a story that's very similar to many people in Florida. Back in 2009, I actually bought a condominium here in Venice because I knew that I was going to retire someplace where I didn't have Ohio winters. So I love the outdoor lifestyle. I love everything that you can do in this community. And going back to my career, I worked for 30 plus years in healthcare. The last 17 years of my career, I worked for an organization that was a regional health system in Dayton, Ohio, called Premier Health. I started as a CEO of one of their subsidiary corporations, and I retired as a regional vice president. So I think it's important for people to know that, you know, I'm very fiscally conservative. I've got a business background. In healthcare, you're always looking at and assessing community needs and services that you need to provide to the community. And then you have to be able to do it within a reasonable budget.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's been my background for 30 plus years. And I think it's very transferable to local government. The organization that I retired from in 2020 actually had a larger annual budget than the county has today. So the scope of working across, you know, multiple business units, multiple departments with a community, you know, doing large budgets is really in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So, and I enjoyed healthcare. It was a great way to serve the community. I always say nurses are salt of the earth. I didn't have it in me to do the blood and guts of healthcare. So my role as an executive was to support the care teams and the care deliverers so that they could really focus on taking care of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of how I looked at my role.
I see. And so you did that for how long?
Well, I was with Premier Health for 17 years. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was in post-acute care, and I ran multiple companies and was regional and had multiple organizations that reported up through me. And the second half of my career was very interesting because the first half of my career, I was the industry expert.
Okay.
I knew all about the reimbursement. I knew all of the regulations. You know, I did a lot of things helping organizations that were distressed, whether it was with compliance or financially, and getting them in a good place.
Yeah.
So the second half of my career, I really became somebody that helped make positive change. So I was no longer the expert. I had to really collaborate with physicians, with the community, with care providers. One of the things that I did was I was the lead executive to implement the electronic health record system for one of our hospitals and their physician companies. So, you know, from that, I was one of their first regional vice presidents over laboratory services because we had five hospital labs and they wanted a system structure so that we were more consistent for our practitioners.
Well, in the communication, I worked in healthcare too, EMR, electronic medical records, and having these systems communicate with each other, it makes things a lot easier for everyone, especially patients. Mm-hmm. They don't have to carry their tote around their records from one provider to another. And that integration was a pretty big thing.
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Yeah, that was huge. So it sounds like 30 years, 40 years, I don't know. And then you moved here, you bought in 2009. And when did you move here full time?
So I moved here full time in 2020.
Like a lot of people.
Yes.
I think there was a wave of people during COVID, right?
And it was interesting. I had, as I said, I'm fiscally conservative. I wanted to retire young.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was to travel and play golf and pickleball and do all the fun things that, you know, that you do in retirement. And I was doing all of that.
Yeah. Good.
So I was really enjoying it when I came down here. I've been in, as you mentioned before, I'm an independent. I've been an NPA for years.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that was intentional because if you think about the time that I moved down here and declared my voting status, there's a lot of partisan politics.
Mm-hmm. No.
I know. That's shocking. Well, not anywhere, right?
Right,
it's shocking.
Anywhere.
So... Yeah. So I intentionally became an NPA because I'm not a fan of partisan politics. I'm not a fan of it on either side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I came down here and I was here to enjoy life.
Yeah. Okay. And so you had this very happy, fun pickleball playing, you know.
President of your HOA.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a response. Yeah, I don't know about how fun that can be. I've been in those situations. It's work.
Yeah.
So tell me now, when did you, first of all, you started focusing on the county, but when did you decide to run and why for the county commission?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a little bit of background.
Yeah.
So in my role as president of the HOA, we had a development that I will call, it doesn't conform with the surrounding community. How's that?
It's incompatible.
It's incompatible.
That's the word, right?
Incompatible.
That's the buzzword, yeah.
And I looked at this, and I had people in my community coming to me going, how does this happen? And I'm like, I don't know how this happens.
Uh-huh.
And it was up on Jacaranda, and a lot of people were upset. I mean, it just wiped out. You know, totally wiped out green space, ended up putting in multiple stories.
What kind? Is it an apartment complex or?
It's an apartment complex that backs up to Chestnut Creek, which is a residential community.
Okay. Single family homes.
Single family homes. Across the street, you've got Waterside Village, which happened to be where my condo was before I bought my home in 16.
Okay.
And those are all two stories. There's, you know, nice setbacks to them. There's nice landscaping. And so it feels like a stark comparison to everything else around it.
Mm.
And so when that happened, I started looking for things to do to make things better because I'm a person of action.
Mm-hmm.
I can complain about things like anyone else, but, you know, that doesn't get you anywhere. So what are you going to do to make a difference? So I actually reached out to Molly Holland in Sarasota County, who does NEST programs, and I apologize, it's like neighborhood. I can't remember what the acronym stands for.
I don't know the
acronym,
yeah.
And I said, Molly, is there something we can do as an HOA to make improvements to some of our common land that'll help offset what's happened on Jacaranda Boulevard? Because our HOA is on either side of Jacaranda, west of Center Road. So she's like, hey, let me get you in contact with this guy named Charles Reith. And he does Microforce. They've been involved in the celery fields.
Charles has been on the show. He's with the Sarasota Urban Reforesters, the SURF.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome.
Right.
Work. Yes.
So that was one of my first entrances into what can you do to make a difference. And we've actually partnered with SURF, Florida Veterans for Common Sense Fund, as our 501c3 to build a microforest in our community. Mm. And we're on that journey, and we're doing it in phases. So, you know, that was something that I felt like we could do and make a positive difference. And through that, I started looking at groups that were challenging this mm-hmm. overdevelopment. And I came across a League of Women Voters event where I ran into Susan Shetley, mm-hmm. Lourdes Ramirez, mm-hmm. Rob Wright, yeah. Thomas Matulo, mm-hmm. and started understanding what was happening in the county, what people were very upset about, not yes. just our little area, but you can take that and multiply it, and it's throughout the county.
Yeah.
And found out, hey, the county commissioners are the ones that are making these decisions. So I attended county commission meetings and got involved in these groups. Mm-hmm. And at one meeting, and I would say this to Rob Wright's face.
Okay.
He stood up at a meeting and he said, if we want different things to happen in this county, we have to have different candidates and we have to support them.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was what put in my mind, you know, could I, should I do that? Mm-hmm. And then I pretty quickly dismissed it.
Oh, really? Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, back in, there was a Right to Read festival down in Venice that I had gone to. And that was the first event that I went to where I really felt like there was a groundswell, mm-hmm. where there was really a citizen outcry of, what can we do different? How do we get this back? And yeah. that was when I decided to run. I actually had somebody that I had talked to about it that said, Sherry, I won't use his exact words. He's yeah. like, get your blank in the race, mm-hmm. in a race.
Mm-hmm. So you decided...
I decided to run.
You decided to run. And I think what you discovered, and I think people are waking up to this, when I did run as an independent in 2010, and I've done a lot of talks about dark money in the county, mm-hmm. and one of the things I'll ask an audience is, can you name your five county commissioners? And most of them have no idea. And if they're coming to a talk about dark money, these are the more, usually they're the more plugged in voters, you know, that they want to know. So I think over time, people are waking up to, like, this is an important position. As our city commissioners, your local commissioners are very important. And certainly there are development interests that totally understand that the decisions at that table can actually make people very wealthy, you know, by mm-hmm. changing land use classifications. So a piece of land that is rural and maybe it had been farmed and, you know, it's not anymore, but if it's classified that it can have single family homes or townhomes or apartments, it has just become much more valuable. So there are a handful of very well-moneyed interests who put a lot of funding into campaigns because they want friendly commissioners, and it makes a big difference to their business to have friendly commissioners. So for them to put 50 grand into a PAC, or, you know, they often have multiple companies, and now mm-hmm. DeSantis has changed the maximum donation. Ron DeSantis, with the legislature, wiped out local campaign finance rules. So we used to have, in the city of Sarasota as well as the county, I expect there are other municipalities too, that the limit was $200 and in that someone could contribute to a campaign. And then you had, in the city of Sarasota, it had to be an actual human being. It could not be a corporation. So people with big interests in land use, you'll see many corporations, and if you go back to who those corporations are tied to, it's the same person giving $1,000 from one, $1,000 from another, you know, different LLCs, and then they give $1,000, and then their wife gives $1,000, and maybe their kids give $1,000 each. So it's worth it for them to put in 10 grand, 50 grand, even more, because one decision at by the county commission, they can recoup all that money.
And it's by factors.
Yeah.
By exponential factors.
Right. And so most people's biggest investment is their house. And if you get upset, as your neighbors did, thinking, which I'm not necessarily, I do think compatibility with height is important. So if there's this big disparity, that's happened in the city of Sarasota. You know, you can integrate different kinds of housing types and make them compatible. You really can. But when people see that, it's like, well, what about my biggest investment? What about where I live, my home, the lifestyle I bought into? Like people living out east who bought specifically to have a rural lifestyle. And it's in our comprehensive plan that Sarasota County is going to offer that. But we're seeing it chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. We're seeing compatibility standards, you know, go by the wayside. We saw the county commission completely ignore the comp plan. The comprehensive plan is like the Bible of land use planning.
Yep, the 2050 plan.
Right. Well, that was part of the comp plan.
Yeah.
And but they completely ignored the rules for Siesta Key development. They just ignored them. And Lourdes Ramirez sued successfully because they just flat out ignored the law. It was crazy. So I think people are waking up. I hope so. It's kind of been part of my mission is to kind of to say, look, these down ballot races actually matter quite a bit. And, you know, you certainly need good development standards given where we live and hurricanes as well, right?
Absolutely.
We need to have good standards. So let's talk now a little bit, because you were there for the 3H Ranch decision. This was a decision where property where there was permission to build
386
homes. Mr. Neal, Pat Neal, brought forward a proposal to have over 6,000?
6,576.
Oh, I love it that you remember these specific numbers. I'm not that good. So more than 6,000 home increase in the density there, which shocked a lot of people. And this was right after
Debbie.
Hurricane Debbie.
Well, yeah. And I like to call it Tropical Storm Debbie.
Well, I understand. It was not a hurricane when it hit us.
Correct.
It became a hurricane later. But
yes.
It was, you're right. And I'll tell you something else. In June, in the city of Sarasota, because in the city of Sarasota, if you include the county events, there have been four flooding events.
Mm-hmm.
There was the June 1,000-year storm that flooded St. Armand's. Then there was Debbie, where I don't know that the city did as badly as out east. But I live in the city of Sarasota.
Well, Baja and Tuttle.
Well,
we lost a fire truck there.
Okay, Bay of Vista.
Or Bay of Vista, sorry.
Bay of Vista and Tuttle.
And Tuttle.
And then you had Helene, and then you had Milton. So that's four major events that were like 100-year, 1,000. The June one, which there's not even a name for, was covered as a 1,000-year storm event. So I take your point that when Debbie hit Sarasota, it was not a hurricane. It was not a hurricane.
And I find it interesting. I was at the meeting that you were talking about with 3H Ranch. The first part of the morning, the county took time to explain. I'm not sure what their exact purpose was, but they kind of explained why they weren't prepared. You know, we thought this was going to happen. We thought that was going to happen.
And yeah, that's right. They were given the whole post-Debbie rap talk about what wrap up, you know, what happened and all that.
Exactly.
Which I still wonder if we really It's going to take a bit of time to tease that out, but
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, so that was the morning of that, mm-hmm. and I actually spoke at the county commission meeting that morning about the flooding, because actually, WSLR, I want to take a second and plug WSLR. Number one,
sure.
It's their 20-year anniversary,
right.
So congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
To that.
Yeah.
And yourself, Florence, Ramon, Johannes have all done a great job of covering local issues and covering these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you.
It's you know, I think it's really important work that you guys are doing. And at that meeting for the flooding, you know, there's a petition which I signed, and it is actually calling for an independent study to occur to see why we had flooding in places that we'd never had before.
Yeah.
You know, people are quick to dismiss, people in government are quick to dismiss it has anything to do with development. But
yeah.
I personally went out to Laurel Meadows 4 days after Debbie. And you obviously couldn't still get into Laurel Meadows, but there were Laurel Lakes. I couldn't drive into that community, which is relatively new. There's mm-hmm. Worthington, which is still being built out. I couldn't drive into that community because the roads were so flooded.
These are communities that flank Palmer Boulevard out east of I-75.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and there is a community that I, because I was out there too post-Debbie, there's a community that's built up much higher than the others that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised, and I thought, oh, for community. Now, granted, it was a lot of rain. It was a lot of rain. However, you also have to wonder if the higher grade of that community maybe mitigated its ability to serve as, you know, a district,
sure.
distributing the water. And if it just ran, you know, it ran downhill into their neighboring.
Yeah.
But these are questions that...
Sure. You don't have to be a hydrologist to understand that water seeks the lowest level.
Yeah.
All you have to do is turn over a glass of water and see where it lands. So, you know,
yeah.
common sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's interesting because the other thing that I heard a lot from the county was this was a historic rain. Well, I can tell you I was here for Ian.
Yes.
And Ian paused over us. If you remember.
I do.
It sat and spun and dropped a lot of rain. I think we had 16 to 18 inches of rain in less than 24 hours. And my community didn't flood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and a lot of communities didn't flood after
right.
Ian.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to look at what are we doing different. And let's go back to 3H Ranch. So the same meeting where we're talking about flooding and is development impacting it,
mm-hmm.
and nobody can give you an answer to that. They'll say no, but they haven't proven what caused it or what hasn't. And
maybe they just want us to forget.
Right. And maybe if you delay long enough, mm-hmm. it comes out of the news cycle and people move on and go on about their daily lives. Well, during the 3H Ranch, I also spoke in the little 5 minutes that you get, which you can articulate your objection to 16 amendments to our existing
there
zoning and comp plan.
Yeah, so that's huge. In order to get this thing passed, there were 16 exceptions
yes.
that had to be approved.
Yes.
Yeah.
And 3H Ranch is what I'm calling our new development strategy. It's the three R's. It's roofs, roads, and retention ponds.
But that's always been how it is, isn't it? I mean,
no.
Okay. Explain.
Yeah, explain. So one of the things in the comprehensive plan and one of the exceptions was decreasing green space. Well, now the county is counting retention ponds as green space,
okay.
as open space.
Yeah.
They didn't used to do that.
These are the little things, right, that when you're paying close attention, there are all these little tweaks that add up to total game-changing.
Absolutely.
Right.
And again, 3H Ranch in our plans and zoning is supposed to have a 500-foot buffer because you're taking a village concept, which, by the way, what was proposed looks like no village in my
it's not a village.
Mind. It's not a village. but you're supposed to have a 500-foot buffer because it's east of 75 to buffer the village concept with the rural living, right? Mm-hmm. That was given away. So now you don't have this 500-foot ring to absorb water. Mm-hmm. You don't have the extra percentage of green space because they decreased it from 50% to 30%, 33%, which was something like 400-and-something acres. I mean, it's not insignificant.
Oh, no, it's huge. Yeah,
it's huge. When you start putting numbers to this, and that's what I found in talking to people, you've got to know the numbers, and you've got to give the people the numbers. Because when you talk about overdevelopment, I mean, that's a great way to catch people's attention, but it's a word. When you define it with you're going from 386 homes to 6,576 homes or units, a 1,600% increase.
Yeah.
People are astounded. They don't understand what we're giving away as a county.
Yeah.
And so that's why I do that. The other thing, and from my perspective, I don't know that it's the worst thing that happened in these 16 changes, but given the fact that they were talking about the Debbie flooding that morning, there was one of the codes has a minimum drainage easement per lot. So by code, which I'm assuming some stormwater engineer said, hey, you need at least 5 feet, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming there's a reason for that minimum in the code for 5 feet. Well, because Neil wanted more roofs than he had, he asked for that to be decreased from 5 feet to 18 inches.
Yeah, I remember Mark Smith holding up a ruler. So to make it clear, this is 18 inches between houses. Is that right? Or the lot line?
Yes.
So is it 36 total?
Yeah.
Or it would have been 10 feet?
Yes.
So 5 feet and 5 feet. Now it's 18 inches, 18 inches. So it's 3 feet.
Right. You can hold hands with your neighbor while you're in your house.
And so there's going to be less ground to absorb
the water.
Water.
So again, going back
more
to Ian, my community, the house that I live in, was built in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got space. We've got retention ponds. We have common areas. We didn't flood during Ian with 16 to 18 inches of water being dumped in less than a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
You see these new communities, well, how many of them had variances in their drainage? How many of them had variances in their green space? How many of them had variances? You know, I mean, you can't say that that doesn't have an impact. And to your point, when I went out there and saw how much higher the communities were than others, I'm hearing that throughout the county. We didn't flood until the community built next to us flooded us.
Yeah.
And at that same meeting, I can get wound up about this, so I need to.
Oh, that's okay. We should, everybody, if you're just joining us, you're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is Sherry Thornton. She is running for County Commission District 3, and we've kind of been looking under the hood at the 3H Ranch proposal, which was given approval by the Sarasota County Commission shortly after Debbie, Tropical Storm Debbie, as you pointed out, it was a tropical storm when it hit us, not even a hurricane. It became a hurricane later. So you feel that when you put numbers, as you said, going from 386 homes by right is what Mr. Neal and his associates who are involved in this project, that's what they had a right to build, and they were asking for 16 exceptions to the rules to get approval to build 6,576 homes.
Yep.
A 16% increase.
1,600%.
1,600% increase, sorry, in density. or as you're calling roofs, you know, which I think actually makes it really clear what we're talking about. Let me ask you this. You have an opponent. I did invite Tom Knight, and Tom Knight lives very close to the Gulf, and he's just got so much cleanup to do right now. So send a shout out to him and his family. I hope their cleanup is going well. How would you differentiate yourself and your candidacy from Mr. Knight, who's a former sheriff? Mm-hmm. He grew up here. You know, there's a lot of community trust. Why Sherry Thornton?
Sure. Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I wish Tom and Tracy good luck in their endeavors to clean up after this, because it's impacted many people's lives. So I would not wish that on anyone.
No, it's, yeah.
And second of all, I always say I respect Tom for his service as sheriff and being in law enforcement. And he's done that all his life. Mm-hmm. And I respect that. So I would say that one of the biggest differences between Tom and I is my business experience. My role in healthcare, as we talked about earlier, I've worked across large organizations, you know, $2 to $3 billion organizations, and how do you serve the community? How do you do it fiscally responsible? How do you assess community needs? And I feel like that my business background and the scope of what I've done in my career lends itself very well to the role of county commission. So that's number one. I think it's important people know, you know, I just didn't fall into the street and say, hey, I think I want to be a county commissioner. I've got a very strong, long history in healthcare service. So that's number one. Number two, I always tell people, follow the money. And, you know, you've done a lot on dark money, looking at PACs. It's incredible. The reason why Sarasota County went to single-member districts was to make it more manageable for local people to run and have local representation. Yeah. And my opponent has over $400,000, and this was when I looked a couple of, you know, a month or so ago, and that includes money that's registered with Supervisor of Election, but he also has a PAC that he's the chairman of his own PAC. And, you know, I tell people, follow the money. You know, he beat Neil Rainford. People are upset about overdevelopment. Mm-hmm. And I use the analogy. Neil had a ton of money from developers. He was like 9 months pregnant. But Tom has money from the developers and what I call the development machine, the land developers, the attorneys that support that industry, you know, hotel developers. He's got money from all of those people. He's like 4 months pregnant, but he's still pregnant.
Well, okay. So I'm just going to say, because he's not here and we are sympathetic to why, right?
Absolutely.
I think it is a different crowd.
Yep.
If I know, I've looked at these donations. It was, I think, at the end of the day, the money that was spent on Neil Rainford's campaign was staggering.
Absolutely.
Staggering. And there was a PAC that was attacking Tom Knight with just crazy lies. So, you know, folks, this is not about, because Venice is a very Republican district, and it's one of the most Republican in Florida, if not the country. I mean, it's very red. And so it's because Tom is a Republican. So with this PAC money, it's not about getting a Republican.
No.
It's about their guy. They want their guy in office. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to track back, and I have a Substack blog. Kathy Antunes, the Detail Substack, and you can find it easily. And it's called Who's Afraid of Tom Knight? And I just was tracking back these donations to the PAC that supported Knight. And it was kind of the usual, I'd say, my opinion, the usual suspects, Pat Neal, Benderson, and that crowd,
sure.
You know. So, it was pretty stunning because the intention of single member districts is like to remove the impact. You're still going to have the money. Mm-hmm. But I think we're all like, wow, look how much these folks are willing to spend. Because I've heard estimates, if you count all the PAC money, because there was this Make America Great Again PAC that put out a voter guide that was supporting Neil Rainford, that was called, you know,
yeah, it was Anthony a fake voter guide.
Fake voter guide, and Anthony Pettuccini, a political consultant, was involved with that. It was Pettuccini's shop who put out this other PAC. But I've heard estimates like $1 million for a county commission raise.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's stunning. I'm like, whoa. I'm stunned, and I've been watching it for a long time. So your donation base is different. Tell us.
Yeah, so absolutely. My donation base is Republicans, Democrats, Independents. It's people that have heard me speak and recognize the work that I'm doing. And know, because of what I'm doing today, they know how I'll vote tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So in addition to being the only candidate that's not taking any developer money, and I won't, as a matter of fact, if I have a reasonably large donation come in, like $500, I actually go back and track to make sure that somebody's not... I won't cash it. You know, because in this day and age, you never know what might happen. So I wouldn't want anybody to be able to come back and say, well, Sherry took money from blah, 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 who's the wife of so-and-so that's a developer.
Right.
So I go to that length to be pure in saying I'm taking no developer money. The other thing that I think is really important, so, you know, one, I say follow the money. And then two is the stuff that we've just been talking about, 3-H Ranch, protects Siesta Key. You know, Lourdes had asked me to speak at the county commission meeting against a development code change that was going to impact protect Siesta Key. And I had remarks that I had prepared. She had remarks she couldn't be there that she had prepared, and I covered both of our remarks. Well, guess what? We won that one. That was a win. So
that was recent, right?
Oh, gosh. That was in, let me see. That was in July. So that was one of the articles that Ramon had actually, you know, quoted me being at the commission meeting.
Scoop, his nickname here is Scoop. Scoop Lopez.
Yep,
Ramon
Scoop,
Lopez.
Scoop Lopez. So, you know, he actually pulled that out and said, you know, this is what Sherry said at the meeting. So, and that's not the only time that I've been there. It's not the only time that I've spoken. When there are these larger developments and I do my research, I ask county planners for information, I get the facts, and then I try to make points that I think will be noteworthy.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, because I saw you and Tom at a Tiger Bay debate in North County, right? And I know you guys have been down in South County, but Rainford, Neil Rainford, was a no-show in the North County Tiger Bay debate. Tiger Bay is a public discussion forum group. It's nonpartisan, so they sponsor these debates. This was the first time that I can recall, because we've had a trend in Sarasota County with developer-backed candidates refusing to show up at debates because they don't think they have to.
Right.
Like, they think they have enough money to bombard people with their messaging so they don't have to show up and go on the record or subject themselves to any kind of adversarial questioning. And there are two things. One is, I'd never seen somebody refuse to show up at Tiger Bay. That was sort of, yeah, you got to go to that one, right? And Rainford didn't show up. Karen Rose also refused for school board.
And Teresa Mast refused in the August election.
That's right. And Mast was the only one of those three that won her race. So that was noteworthy. But I also feel like the race between you and Tom, there's back and forth. But you guys are pretty respectful, and it's a good conversation. That was a good debate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. You know, the one thing that I learned in my business experience is you work with everybody. You know, you say things that are factual and that have meaning, but you're not derogatory. You're not name calling. You know, I don't exaggerate. I want to make sure if I'm saying something that I have the facts. And if I've misquoted something and I find out about it, I correct it.
Yeah, and you both, I think, from what I observed, there were some good-natured ribbing, but
yeah,
but you both would have that demeanor, which is really great to see as someone who's seen a lot of disrespect since I've been watching county politics. Can you fill us in? I want to just go back to Siesta Key. What exactly was the win? So people, we need some good news.
You need some good news?
Yeah.
So there was a unified development code change on the non-conforming lots. And with the development change, they could actually combine lots or uncombine lots and create more density.
Yeah.
And
Build more.
Yeah. So the developers were trying to get that change through so that they could manipulate the existing code where we're not allowed to build more density because, as we saw in the storms, we can't evacuate Siesta Key. And we couldn't since, I think it was 1989 when John Thaxton was around and put the restriction in that there's, you know, we're not going to build more density to Siesta Key because of safety reasons.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's a concern that you don't want to create bottlenecks, but the part of the evacuation issue is some people don't want to leave.
People don't want to leave.
This time I think they left.
Yes. Milton. Yeah, they did.
Most people did.
But I think the North Bridge floods and the South Bridge had construction.
Okay, yeah.
So we actually had some bottlenecks there. I mean, hopefully, with what was coming with Milton, I think many people evacuated.
Took it seriously. Yeah, they did take it seriously. What has, in District 3, you know, there's a lot of FEMA money that will come our way. There's FEMA money that's already come to the county. And then there's this Biden infrastructure money, which I know you've had your eye on. Can you tell us what's been your observation about how the county is managing this federal money? Are they putting it to good use? I know I'm concerned about what I'm hearing with an actual lobbying organization getting some FEMA money where it really should be spent somewhere else. This is a building, I think it's the Suncoast Builders, it's John Mast and Teresa Mast organization. Money for a building when actually that FEMA money from Ian could be going to something like the Northport Health Sciences Academy that they're creating. And so you're nodding. Sure. Tell me what you think about this federal funding from various sources, FEMA and Biden infrastructure money.
Right. So whether it's that, whether it's the HUD money, I think from my perspective, and I'll just give you one example, what I saw with the HUD money that came in that was supposed to help people that were impacted by Ian, okay? Mm-hmm. There was $40 million that was set aside to help with affordable housing, which...
Huge need.
Yeah, and, you know, and when I say that, I always try to link things back globally. That's important to people that work in our county to have affordable housing, but it's also extremely important to businesses.
To have employees. Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the chambers are getting together to look at how do we need to tackle this affordable housing. So businesses are concerned about this in addition to citizens. Mm-hmm. I mean, government should be here to serve the citizens. Mm-hmm. But
well, and the citizens, if you're a snowbird here, all these folks that take care of your home, that serve you in a restaurant, that if you go to the hospital, they need a place to live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there was $40 million that was set aside for that. And of that $40 million, it was close to like 28 of it went to some affordable housing projects. Mm. 12 of it went to help infrastructure out east for developers.
Yeah, that's bad.
So again, when you talk about how important these local elections are and following the money and following the trail, we're making decisions that are, again, helping developers at the expense of our citizens that live here. And I object to that. You know, one of the things, because I've been so involved at the county commission meetings and seeing and hearing this, we need somebody that is taking these actions today. And I'm that candidate. I'm actually working. I'm doing that work. I'm listening to people. I'm seeing the meetings. I'm making these things. And the other thing we need to do is make it more transparent. Because I can tell you, and you know this from doing your research, how hard is it to find all this information?
Oh, yeah.
They bury it.
They tried to bury it. Yeah, they do. And they do. And what's also interesting is just the kind of propagandizing that I've seen, and something funny you had shared, that this Biden infrastructure money, the county commission was at the dais thanking Greg Stubbe. Mm-hmm. Stubbe voted against it, okay? And you made the point to them, like, don't you mean President Biden? Because your congressman voted against this money. You should be thanking him.
Well, that was even before I decided to run for county commission. And I was going, that was in my, well, my ongoing learning phase, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we should all be lifelong learners.
There's so much to learn once
absolutely.
You get hooked on this. Yeah.
There's so much to learn. So what I had done, I was so outraged because people don't realize, and I can't remember the number, but it was millions and millions and millions of dollars that the county received from...
Wasn't it hundreds of millions? We're still... We have to go back.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I don't want to say anything on air and then have somebody say, well, Sherry said this and it wasn't true. It was a lot of money. And they were all patting themselves on the back for getting this money. Yeah. Well, that rubbed me the wrong way because I believe in truth. So I went back, I researched all the money that we had received, where it came from, which bills it came from, and which representatives from Florida voted for it. And I read that into the record. And I said, if you note, Greg Stubbe's name wasn't on this list. So you need to be thanking the people that voted to appropriate the money.
Right, right.
And the president that signed it. You know, and again, I'm an NPA. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're a Democrat. But, you know, truth is truth.
Yeah, don't do this.
Don't play partisan.
Yeah, don't play the public. Don't spin like that. I mean, that's just, it's a lie.
Yeah, and it's wrong.
Yeah.
So I had to correct the record.
Yes. Well, and people like you, I love people who get in there and do the research, because there's... Frankly, you know, you talk about being a lifelong learner. There's a lot that the county's responsible for. There's a lot that the city is responsible for. And keeping track of it all, listen, it's hard for the commissioners to keep track of it all. For citizens to have their finger on the pulse all the time, it does take a village. It's just none of us have the time to do all of it all the time. It'd be impossible. But when we each do our piece, or, you know, there's always going to be. And here's the thing. People who do this government accountability watchdog type of work, I think there was a time in the not too recent past, but it's been a while in Sarasota County, when the county commissioners, it's really post-Citizens United when it all changed, because the money just gushing in.
Follow the money.
Changed dynamics. But the elected officials understood, okay, Jane in front of me here is bringing a concern forward, and she's bringing some good information. But they understood that Jane, she didn't have to be the head of an organization. If Jane came and spent her time and understood the issue, there were a lot of Janes out there who would feel the same way as her. So there was a respect, right, for citizens who came forward. And since Citizens United, since this dark money management factor came in, since we've got actual elected officials handling this money. We've got officials chairing their own PACs, which has been a huge change, a sea change in Florida, which ethically, you know, is just a means to get around campaign finance rules. And since that's happened, they just don't think they need you. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just think if I've got enough money, I can bulldoze over these legitimate objections and good information. And so it's starting to not work anymore. I mean, we're seeing mm-hmm. the beginning of a change. Sometimes it still does. But Manatee County was a great example. It does require citizen effort, mm-hmm. you know, and they did create their own PAC, right? So PACs don't necessarily have to be a bad thing. So I'm just curious what your thoughts on there.
Can you summarize the question?
I don't really have a question. Okay. It's about the dynamics that we're dealing with,
yeah.
right?
So, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think once you have corporate money, unlimited corporate
That's
money.
That's the thing. Unlimited corporate
and PACs,
money.
And PACs, yeah. And those types of things, it diminishes the role of voting. And all you have to do is go to a county commission meeting and watch citizen testimony and watch the commissioners. And I will say, because I do try to be fair, Mark Smith is one of the most engaged when people are speaking. Mm-hmm. He seems to take it and listen to it. But if it's something that, you know, going and speaking against 3-H Ranch, that was a done deal before it ever hit the door.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing anybody could have said would have made a difference. And that's why I believe so strongly that I need to be on the commission, because if you sit on the commission and say, really, what is our expertise, the five of us, that says we can decrease drainage easements and not impact flooding in a neighborhood?
Yeah.
If you say that from the dais, that's going to carry a lot of weight.
Yeah, we do need representation, people who are willing to say the words. We have some.
Mm-hmm.
We do need more.
Right.
And so it's great that you're running. I wish you all the best of luck. And I'm frankly, it's just encouraging to see that the big money, although I know Tom Knight has big money too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was encouraging that Venice's voters in their primary between Knight and Rainford made a decision to go with somebody who was, you know, a local person who didn't have the most money, still had a lot of money, mm-hmm. but he didn't have the most money.
Right.
And it's encouraging that you're getting such great feedback from voters. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
For running. Thank you for, because we need to be having these conversations.
Absolutely. And I'm cautiously optimistic. When I hear voters and they know that I'm not taking any developer money and they know that I'm already doing the work, I think mm-hmm. those two things, words and actions, align. And that's why I think that that resonates with Republicans, with independents, with anybody that cares about this issue. It's somebody that's currently fighting the fight.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me different than my opponent.
Well, I thank you so much for coming here today, and I thank you for the work that you're doing. Best of luck to you, Sherry Thornton. I know we're going to be hearing more about you in the years to come, and I do appreciate the work that you do. Everybody, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR. Thanks so much for joining us. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Make it a great day. We'll be right back.
Democracy Now!, you're listening to WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It seems the situation is only getting worse. Definitely, it's obvious. You see displacement, people not finding places to stay. People got displaced from the South, from Daya, from Becca Valley, and even from areas of our fellow Christians. They as well got displaced.
Lebanon is in a state of crisis as Israel intensifies its war. Video has emerged of Israel blowing up an entire village. Meanwhile, the death toll from an Israeli attack on a municipal building has risen to at least 16, including the town's mayor. We'll go to Beirut for the latest. Then, as aid groups warn Israel is wiping northern Gaza off the map, the Biden administration is threatening to cut military assistance to Israel, but not for at least 30 days.
Given you are already saying humanitarian assistance is very low and putting in front of Israel a bunch of concrete measures on how to improve it, why are you waiting for another 30 days to implement the law?
Because we believe it's appropriate to give them a chance to cure the problem.
We'll speak to former State Department official Josh Paul, who resigned in protest last year. He's just launched a lobbying organization called A New Policy. Then we'll look at Israel's threat to launch retaliatory strikes against Iran as